The teaching that I'm giving today is the foundation or the preliminary teachings. So for this, that we as a human being in our life, there are many different requirements. But the most important thing is the spiritual practice through which one can accomplish the peace and happiness in this life, and also in the future lives. And so therefore, the spiritual practice is very important. The reason is that because the Buddha's teaching says that all sentient beings, not only the human beings, but every sentient being possess the Buddha nature. In a sense that everyone has the seed of the Buddha, so that everyone, if you meet with the right methods, then one can accomplish the Buddhahood. So everyone is equal. I feel that Buddha is the first one who gave the equal rights, not only to human beings, but every sentient beings, because every sentient being possesses the Buddha nature. So everyone has the chance. But at the moment, we do not realize this. Instead of seeing the Buddha nature, instead of seeing the true nature of the mind, that we are covered with the obscurations, the obscuration of the defilements and the obscuration of the knowledge. And due to this is because of the lack of wisdom and the great ignorance. Instead of seeing the true nature of the mind, that we cling as a self without any logical reasons, and also due to long time build-up of strong habitual tendencies that we cling as a self. And when you cling as a self, then naturally there's others. So when you have the self and the others, then there's attachment to one's own side and anger to the others and ignorance in general. So these are the three main defilements. And then from these arises the pride and jealousy, stinginess, etc. And then we take actions, and due to this that we caught up in the what we call the samsara or the circle of existence. And as long as we are in the samsara, that one is not free from suffering. According to the teachings, the samsara is divided into the six realms, the three lower realms and three higher realms. Three lower realms means the hell realm, hungry ghost realm, and animals realm. The hell realm and hungry ghost realm, we are not accessed, we can't see them. We don't have the direct access, but one can learn from the sutras and also from the authentic commentaries and their nature and so on. But the animals realm, of course, we can see how the animals are suffering. And then in the three higher realms are the human realm and the demigods realm and the gods realm. And in these, seemingly, that seems to be like the mixture of happiness and suffering. But if we carefully examine, there's no real happiness. Only when you compare with the great suffering, it appears to lack happiness. But if we carefully think, even the happiness that we consider as happiness, also in the reality, is another kind of suffering. So the generally also, I mean, as a human being in our human life, we have the four major sufferings. Everyone that have to go through, that is like the suffering of birth, suffering of old age, suffering of sickness, and suffering of death. And there are also many other, in everyday life, we face so many different kind of problems and sufferings. And then the demigods, and the gods, again, we don't have the direct access, but again, we can learn from the authentic teachings. The demigods naturally in the jealousy, because they are better than human beings, but they are not equal to the gods. So they always have a great competing with the gods' realms. And so, therefore, they have a great suffering. And since their merit is not equal to the gods' realm, so they have a great, they are always defeated. And so they have great sufferings. And then the gods' realm, there are three different kind of gods. The gods' realm, that is what we call the realm of desire, the Kama Dhatu. It's called the realm of desire. There are six different levels of gods. They have a great place, great body, and beautiful place, and luxurious lives, great facilities. But again, it does not last forever. One day, suddenly, they realize that they are going to die. And then not only that they are going to die, but they, since their entire life is spent indulged with the enjoyment and never thinking about the spiritual path, so most of them falls into to the lower realms, and they have the certain kind of clairvoyance so that they knew where they are going to be fall. And so they have in tremendous mental sufferings. And so in this way, and then there are higher gods, like the gods who are residing in the Rupa Dhatu, which means the realm of forms, and the Arupa Dhatu, which means the realm of formless. And in these realms, they do not have such visible suffering as we have, physical or mental suffering as we have, but the strength or the power of their worldly meditation exhausts them through the power of their worldly meditation, they reach to a very high level, but then after the exhaustion of the power of their meditation, again they fall down. So again they have to go through the sufferings. So in this way it goes on and on. So it's called the circle of life or the wheel of life. Just like the wheel turns one round, then it doesn't stop. Again it turns and it goes on and on. As we are born here, go through this life, then again, then we die, and then again we begin our next life. And there, of course, the question is that whether there is a next life. Of course, many people believe that there is no such thing as the next life, because we don't see. We are not directly accessed. And there are some people say that we don't know, and some people say there is a next life. The reason is that we have the body and the mind. And this body is visible. We knew from where it comes from, how it is formed, and how it is grown, and how it is maintained. And eventually, of course, this body will be disposed in one way or another. And we can see with our eyes, we can touch with our hands, and we can describe its colors and size and shape, etc. But the mind is something very different. Mind is, we can't see with our eyes, we can't touch with our hands, we can't describe the size of the mind or the shape of the mind or the color of the mind. So the mind is something very, it's invisible. Yet, of course, the mind is the most powerful. If there's no mind, then our physical body, even if we have the physical body, then it doesn't work. It's a dead body. Like dead body cannot work. Likewise, the mind without the body without mind is like that dead body. And so it is the mind that does everything, all the good things, all the bad things, all the virtuous deeds, all the non-virtuous deeds. The most important is the mind. And so when we leave this body, the body will be exposed in one way or another, but the mind cannot be cremated, cannot be buried, cannot be washed. And since it is already invisible, powerfully invisible, so therefore it has to, it cannot be disappeared. So when it could not disappear, then it has to enter another life, another ways. So that's why there is a logical reason or the logical proof to say that the mind continues. So when the mind continues, it means it enters to another life. So it begins next, one can establish and prove that there is a next life. And when we could next life, then of course, obviously, the present mind, where it comes from, also we can establish there's a previous life. So in this way that it goes on. And so the entire samsara, there is everyone is suffering. Everyone is suffering. Even in the general society, you know, like the developed countries and developing countries, of course, in the poor countries, there's a lot of physical sufferings. Hunger and poverty and all kinds. And then in the developed country also, as we can all see, although we have very great facilities, many things, but still we could not satisfy. There's always many things to complain. There are always problems. Many things. So that this shows the entire samsara is suffering. And nobody wants suffering. Whether you are a believer or non-believer, whatever kind of religions that you follow, whatever kind of philosophies that you follow, whatever kind of ideologies that you follow, then nobody wants sufferings. And everybody is longing for happiness, for the sake of happiness that we develop, and for the sake of happiness that we practice, for the sake of happiness we also do bad things. People who do bad things also, they are hoping by doing these that one can gain certain kind of happiness. So everything is done for the sake of happiness. But the real happiness could not achieve just mere doing our efforts or just mere having the material progress. It is obvious that shows. And so the real happiness, peace and happiness, how we can achieve is only through the spiritual practice. And that is that through the religious teachings that changes our mind, And there are many different religions in the world. And I myself personally believe that all the major religions of the world, every religion has its own beauty and its own way to help the mankind. We are all different. People are all different. So therefore, the variety of spiritualism is necessary. Just as like we need many different medicines. There's not one medicine that can cure all the disease. You need different medicines for different disease, and moreover, different medical medicine, different medical systems. For example, for certain diseases, allopathic medicine is very effective. For certain diseases, the Ayurvedic is more effective. For certain diseases, other things, different things. So therefore, it shows, likewise, the spiritual, different variety of spiritual practice is necessary. But as a Buddhist, from the Buddhist point of view, that to achieve the real peace and happiness is through the practice of dharma, what we call dharma. The word dharma, in Sanskrit, the word dharma has actually many different meanings when you use in different contents. But when we refer to as a holy dharma, that is the teachings that changes our mind, makes our mind. So the reason why the Buddha is great, just by saying that Buddha is great, we could not establish that Buddha is great. But by teachings that Buddha gave, that we practice, and then we gain experience, it changes our mind. It changes our mental attitude. It changes, it gives us the strength to face the problems, and it gives us the strength and it gives us the comfort. So therefore, the teaching is great. So the one who gives such great teaching, we can establish is a great Lord, great founder. And so according to the Buddha's teachings, that only way to overcome the suffering is to practice the Dharma. And to practice Dharma, you need the base. Although everyone, every sentient being has the Buddha nature. Every sentient being, if you meet with the right methods, that one can become the Buddha. But the human beings have the best chance, because the lower realms, they have an unimaginable amount of sufferings and ignorance, and there's absolutely no way to, no chance to practice Dharma. And the higher gods, although in terms of result is concerned, the demigods and the gods have a much greater, better place, better body, better life, longer life. So actually much better than human beings. But in terms of as a base to practice Dharma is concerned, the human life is best. Because the human life has the chance, we have the leisure, we have the freedom, we have the chance to practice Dharma. And at the same time, we have sufferings that helps us to lead into the spiritual path. So that as in terms of base to practice Dharma is concerned, the human life is the best. So therefore, in the teachings it says the human life is very difficult to obtain, especially the human life which is endowed all the prerequisite, the human life which has free from all the unfavorable conditions, and the human life that has all the favorable conditions is very difficult to obtain from many point of view. From the number point of view, although there are lots of human beings, in fact, the world has like the population problems and so on. But we think when you compare, although there are so many human beings, but when you compare with the other living beings, the human beings are in few. It is easy to count how many people living in the country, but it is very difficult to count how many insects, even in a small place. So from the number point of view, and also from the cause point of view, from the example point of view, and from its nature point of view, that is very difficult to obtain the human life. And not only that it is very difficult to obtain, but also very precious, more precious than the what we call the wish-fulfilling jewels. It is said that there is a jewel, special jewel, that if you clean it and then place it on the top of the banners, then it can fulfill all your wishes. All your wishes means like the material needs, your material needs like food, shelter, medicine, clothes, etc. But it could not be bestow liberation or enlightenment or even higher rebirth. But through this human life, is more precious. This human life is more precious than the wish-fulfilling jewel, because through this human life that we can accomplish higher rebirth, liberation, even the ultimate enlightenment. So therefore, this human life is very, very precious. Due to our own merit and virtuous deeds, special prayers, and that this time that we are born as a human being, free from all the unfavorable conditions, and human life that has all the favorable conditions. And so when we have such a chance, that if we miss this chance, then next time whether we can get such chance is very doubtful and very difficult to say. So therefore, when we have such chance, that one should not waste, and one should must do it. One must do it. One must try to practice, and I must try to gain at least certain steps towards the liberation and enlightenment. Because liberation and enlightenment is not something that somebody can give you as a gift, or somebody can pray for you, and somebody can help you to do. The Buddha said that I have shown you the path of liberation, but the liberation itself entirely depend on you. So that means, and also Buddha said, you yourself is the savior of you. Nobody can save you, only we can save ourselves. The way the Buddha is helping the sentient being is not by performing miracles, or not by helping with his hands, but by showing the right direction. He says, this way is the right way, this way is the wrong way. So if you go this way, you are going to suffer. But if you go into this way, then you will attain. You will be free from all the sufferings. And so he has shown us the path. But to reach that destination, ourselves have to go there. The Buddha just cannot take us. So we have to make ourselves. Just as Buddha is actually like a doctor. When we are sick, it is very important to have a good doctor. And so after consulting the good doctor, then the main help have to come from the patient, because the patient have to follow the doctor's advice, take the medicine, right medicine, do the right things. Otherwise, even we have the best doctor, if we don't follow the doctor's advice, if we don't take the right medicine, if we don't do the right things, then you could not cure. But if we follow the doctor's advice, then one can cure. So similarly, the Buddha is like a doctor. Dharma is like medicine. We ourselves are like patient. So the main help, the patient have to follow the doctor's advice and do the right things. Then one can cure. So therefore, he said, you yourself is the savior of you. And so therefore, when we have all the opportunities, we are born as a human being, and we have all the necessary conditions, that we should not lose it, because and also we must do it in a very in a quick way, because one never knows. Buddha said everything is impermanent. All compound things are impermanent. Compound thing means things that are created through the cause and condition are impermanent. It is said that end of gathering is separation. Wherever we gather, of course, the temporary gathering like today, of course, we gather just only for a few hours and then all we go separately in different directions. But even in the, we think like more like a permanent basis, like one family. We think all family members are together. But it's also only temporarily, because no one lives forever. So the elder ones live first, and then the parents, and then the children. So eventually all the family members leaves this world and goes to different directions, different families, in different places. So the end of gathering is a separation. And the end of accumulation is exhaustion. No matter how much you accumulate, the wealth, possessions, things, power, that it does not last forever. Eventually, that it all exhausts. And the end of height is to fall down. No matter how high you reach, the highest level you reach, then again, you fall down. You fall down. Even historically, as we can read that the great empires that were in the histories tells us that in the ancient time there were universal emperors that who owns, who conquers the whole continent, many continents. But also even in the modern history also there are empires that were owned almost the entire world. But they did not last forever. Eventually they all become smaller, lost, and then become very small. So the end of height is to fall down. One does not remain forever. And the end of birth is death. Anyone who is born in this world has to end with death. There's no one who is born but who did not die. There's not even the slightest doubt about it. Anyone who is born in this world has to die. We read histories, the great masters were very holy, who helped so many beings, who have devoted their entire life for the benefit of other sentient beings. But even they also today are historical figure. And there are also great statements, great emperors, great leaders. Even in our own family, we have our own ancestors, the great fathers and so on. There were many great ones, many very good people, but today they no longer exist. Today they no longer are here. And just like here also, actually today we have gathered many people. Within 100 years, these old people, these beings also, all of us also will be not in this world. And so therefore, the end of death and birth is death. So therefore, one have to die one day. And this death, when it will come, nobody can tell. There's a complete uncertainty when the death will strike to us. Although there are divinations, astrologies, prophecies that can tell us that you are going to live up to certain years, but there's no certainty. For example, the candle, although the candle is still long and it's burning, but a certain wind can blow it out for any moment. So similarly, outwardly, like accidents, heart attacks, all kinds of things happen. Internally also, our whole physical body is with the elements like heat, water, and so on. So if these are not, when it is balanced, when all the elements are balanced, then we are healthy and happy. But if the elements are unbalanced, then it disturbs, and all kinds of pains and all kinds of sickness can arise. Certain sickness can arise by eating wrong food, by doing wrong things, so can cause. And so there's no definite lifespan. And even there is, but certain obstacles can blow it out at any moment. So therefore, it is very important. First of all, it is very important to use this precious life in a more effectively way, so that this life should not be wasted, and this life should be used in a more purposeful way. Purposeful way means to make ourselves happy, and also to make others to help others, and then to practice spiritual path, so at least that we can reach at a certain steps towards the liberation and enlightenment. And so although many people are interested in Dharma path, And many, especially many people follow the traditions that we go to the temples, to prostrations, make offerings, circumambulations, recite prayers, meditation, do meditations, recite mantras. All of this is, of course, very meritorious and can gain great merits. But that is that alone is not really effective unless we make our own inner mental changes. So first we have to think, what is the most important thing in our life? In the worldly life, that people want higher positions, wealth, fame, and friends, win friends, supporters. All of this, the worldly prosperities, has not real purpose, because how long one can live? There are hardly people live up to 100 years. Very few people live up to 100 years. So it is just a matter of 100 years. Then after that, no matter. So the day when we leave this world, no matter how clever you are, how powerful you are, how rich you are, how many supporters you have, how many friends you have, cannot help. We have to leave ourselves alone. Nobody can share your sufferings. Nobody can help us. The only way, only one that can help at that moment is the Dharma practice we do, spiritual practices we do, the virtuous deeds that we do can help us at that moment. And so therefore, it is very important to do it right now, because one never know whether one will have such chance to practice in the future. Many people think that at the moment I'm young, and so in the moment I will enjoy the life, and then and when I get older, then I will enter the spiritual path, and so on. But there are many people, many young people dies before the very old people dies. Many healthy people dies before the people who are very sick dies. So one can never tell. So therefore, it is very important to begin the spiritual path and practice very diligently. And in a very straight way. And so therefore, although we practice many things, but I feel that we are not thinking. We just followed, especially those who are traditionally following the Dharma path. They just follow. We go to a temple and pray and so on. But we are not thinking why we are practicing Dharma. What is the benefit of practicing Dharma? Why if we don't practice Dharma, then what happens? What are the consequences that we face? So, first of all, I think it is very important to think, what is the most important thing in our life? How can we get the real peace and happiness? And then we realize only way to achieve the real peace and happiness is to practice the Dharma. And how can we practice Dharma? Dharma is not just praying or going to the temples or making offerings, doing prostrations or circumambulations. The main Dharma is we have to change our mind. Without changing mind, if your mind still remains and you recite many prayers, you recite many mantras, you do lots of circumambulations, of course it is meritorious. They also, of course, adds up and is very, very virtuous deeds, and one can earn great merits, but that alone will not be able to accomplish the liberation or the enlightenment unless we change our mind. So to change our mind, the preliminary practices like suffering of samsara, the difficulties of obtaining the precious human birth, and the impermanent, and the cause and effect. Then we think that why we are here, why we have to go through these lives, all the sufferings, why we have to suffer, who is doing all this, why we have to in our life so many different kinds of things, experience that we encounter. And so for this, the Buddha said that everything is created our own karma. There's no creator who creates our happiness and sufferings. It is our own deeds. So therefore, you can't blame to anybody. Those who believe everything is created by our creator, then you can blame why you make even the deities. If we believe that the deities created the sufferings and happiness, then of course we have to blame them. We worship the deities, we pray to the deities, and yet they are not helping when we are in a crisis. In India, in South India, in the village, there's a small village, there's a school, it's a village school, it's very poor. Of course, the roofs are all made out of the grass. And then one day, there was a big fire. And of course, being a grass, it burns very fast. And the children are all very small children, so they could not come out. And many of them died. So, of course, parents were very very sad and great suffering. And parents were all actually very religious. And they every day they do pujas in their shelter altar. They have statues of the deities. And so they make offerings. And they do traditional prayer. And their main prayer is, of course, the safety of their children, because all parents love their children, so they every day they pray for their children. But of course, all the children died due to the fire. So they got so fed up, they got so angry with their gods, they throw all the statues in the ditch. So likewise, that if we believe, if there's a god, the deities created all our sufferings, then of course we can't blame the parents, because if we believe the deities created all the sufferings and happiness, then why they give us such sufferings? But in the Buddhist tradition, we can't blame to the deities, because the deities help us in certain ways, but the main thing comes from our own. Because due to our own deeds that we face the sufferings. Due to our own good deeds that today we enjoy the life. And so the good things are also from our own, credit goes to ourselves, because we have done the virtuous deeds in the past, that today we enjoy the life. And because we have done the non-virtuous deeds, that we suffer today, so that we can't blame to anybody. So in this way, the Buddhism teaches the cause and effect of the law of karma. All the good things that we in our life, the long life, the good health, the prosperity, the fulfilling of our wishes, are all due to our own good deeds, the good deeds that we have committed in the past. So today that we enjoy the life, we have all the good things. And also all the bad things, like short life, sickness, the poverty, not being able to fulfill your wishes, failures, are also due to our own non-virtuous deeds that we have committed in the past. So today that we suffer, so we can't blame to any. We have to blame to ourselves. So in this way, the law of karma. So this, to practice the religion, to practice Dharma seriously, that it is very important to think about this. And then we realize that how important to practice Dharma, and how important to practice Dharma quickly without wasting any time. And also how important to practice Dharma effectively. As an ordinary person, actually, there are millions and millions of beings who are not interested in any spiritual path, any kind of spiritual path. There are many beings who are also interested in the spiritual path. And those who are interested in the spiritual path also, most of us, although in appearance we practice Dharma, but not a real Dharma. Even though we recite, we wear robes, and we practice Dharma, we go to a temple, we meditate, and so on. But still, of course, our mind is still a worldly mind, so we still have the worldly attachment and worldly thoughts. And so even the practice also is kind of linked with the worldly gains. So although in appearance it's a spiritual practice, but in reality it becomes another worldly activity. So therefore, to make it a real spiritual path, even we can't practice the whole time spiritual practice, but whatever amount of time that we can use, even if it is only a few hours, at that moment, we should not think of the worldly gains, and we should try to make it a true Dharma, true path that will lead us to the liberation and enlightenment. So therefore it says in the parting from the four attachments that if you have attachment to this life, one is not a religious person. This is very important, because even though we practice, but if it is not effective, if it is not done in the right way, it becomes still a worldly activity and not a. So the foundation or the preliminary practice in Tibetan, what we call ngondo, means preliminary practice. This is very, very important, because through these ngondo practice or the foundation practices makes our path, our practice, our religious practice, our spiritual practice, a real Dharma that will lead to the liberation and enlightenment. So therefore, it is very important to do this.
And this is not, many people think nowadays the Ngondro practice is just to counting the refuge and certain mantras, mandala offerings and things like that to reach a certain number. If you reach this number, then you're expecting something to happen. But unless until actually it changes your mind, no matter how many mantras you recite, how many mandala offerings you make, it does not make so much difference. So as long as if you change your mind, then even though it is a few mantras you recite, it is effective. So therefore, first of all, these things like suffering of samsara, difficulties of obtaining the precious human life, the impermanent, and the law of karma, these are very, very important. And these are not something that you count or you recite. It is that you have to think in everyday life, even while you are working, even you are in the midst of people, even when you are in a busy life, that you can think of this. You can think of the samsara, you can think of the sufferings, you can think of the impermanent. You don't have to do this in a temple or in your own shrine room or something, but while you are working, while you are in traveling, you can think about this, and then that will lead our mind to the spiritual path. So these are the what I try to say is in a kind of a common language, not in book style, but in a common language. Try to present what the preliminary practices really means. These are the common preliminary practices. That is common means like in the Sutrayana and Mantrayana and everywhere. And then there are now, in then your actual practice, then there are preliminary practices, actual foundations, what we call uncommon, because uncommon means that uncommon foundation practices that are in the, because most of us, mainly you do with the Mantrayana or the Vajrayana way of practicing. And so therefore they are called uncommon. Although the first practice, the refuge, is actually common to, refuge has actually many different levels. There's a worldly refuge, and beyond worldly refuge. So the two main divisions. Worldly refuge itself also has two parts. Object worldly refuge and mind. Mental worldly refuge. Object worldly refuge means that when we crisis in our life, when people are in desperate situation, we seek refuge. We seek refuge for the spirits and local deities, trees, mountains, rocks. And so this is this is worldly refuge, taking object refuge. Then the mind refuge means, mind worldly refuge means, even though we take the refuge in the right object, like Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, but the purpose is to have a long life, good health, prosperity, successful in the life, fulfill your wishes. So this is although is a right object, but mind, the purpose is for worldly purpose. So therefore, these both are worldly refuge. It's not the right refuge. And then the beyond worldly refuge also has the two, the Hinayana and Mahayana. And the Hinayana also has like the Shavakas and the Pratyeka Buddhas. So all of these have four different characters or four different parts. Like the cause, object, the duration, and the purpose. So that makes, in that way, it makes the differences. The worldly refuge is, the cause is mainly the fear. Fear, when you face the crisis in the life, then you have a fear. And due to the fear that we take refuge. And object is, as I said, the worldly deities, and then also, and then right object. And religion is just for to overcome the temporary problems or sufferings. And the purpose is just for one's own sake. Whereas in Hinayana, Shavakas, their main object is to become not the Buddha, but to become the Arhats. So they take refuge mainly to the Sangha. And then the Pratyeka Buddhas, their main object is to become the Pratyeka Buddha, not the fully enlightenment. So the main object is Dharma. And then the Bodhisattva, so these are the two Hinayana refuge. And then in the Mahayana refuge is with the four. The cause, generally, the cause of taking refuge is fear, faith, and compassion. So in the Mahayana refuge, also, all these three causes, the fear, faith, and compassion are there. But mainly the compassion, because when we say Mahayana, means that every practice we do is not for the sake of oneself, but for the sake of entire sentient beings. So to have this goal, to have this purpose, you have to have the compassion. If you don't have the compassion, how can you have the mind to help the sentient beings? So the main cause is the compassion. And then the object, although in all Buddhist traditions, object of refuge is the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, is same. But in explanation, it is different. In Mahayana, when we say Buddha, the Buddha means one who possesses the three kayas, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. Dharmakaya means the body of reality. And Dharmakaya is referred as like double purities. Double purity means the natural purity that we all have. All true nature of our mind is pure. It is never stained with the obscurations. If our true nature of the mind is stained with the obscurations, then one could never be free from the obscurations. But we can free because the obscurations are only at the temporary level and they are not in the nature of the mind. So natural purity we all possess, but we don't see this natural purity because at the moment we have the temporary obscurations that blocks to see the natural purity. But the Buddhas, through the accumulation of the merit and wisdom that clears all the obscurations, including their propensities, so therefore it is called the double purity. So when the temporary obscurations are cleared, so the Dharmakaya is not something that we gain from the outside. Dharmakaya is something that which we already have, but we don't see because of the obscurations. Once the obscurations are cleared, then it is revealed, we can see it. So therefore it's called the double purity. So this is the Dharmakaya. And then the Sambhogakaya means the body of enjoyment. When you clear all the obscurations, then all the obscurations, then you gain the great qualities, transform. So that these qualities that you newly gained, we don't have these qualities at the moment, but when you clear the obscurations, then you gain this. Our ordinary physical body becomes the Buddha's body with the 32 signs and 80 qualities. And when our ordinary voice becomes the voice of the melody of Brahma with the 60 branches, and our ordinary mind also becomes the omniscient wisdom. So that is the Sambhogakaya. And then Nirmanakaya means the body of emanations. Sambhogakaya is only visible, or Dharmakaya is, of course, invisible. Dharmakaya is beyond. Dharmakaya is the reality. So Dharmakaya is only visible among the Buddhas. But the Sambhogakaya is visible for the highest level of the Buddha's followers, like bodhisattvas, but not for ordinary beings. But the Nirmanakaya, the body of emanation, is revealed, is wherever, whenever, whatever form requirement, in human form, animal's form, and all kinds of different forms will appear and help. So the Buddha with the three kaya, Buddha means with the three kaya, is only described in the Mahayana. And then the Dharma, the word Dharma has two parts, the teachings and also the realizations. The realizations that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas gained by eliminating all the obscurations and all the realizations. So in this way, it is that the truth of cessation and the truth of path are the realization part. And that is also the Mahayana. And then the Sangha means actually communities. Here it is the holy communities. The true Sangha are the Bodhisattvas that who have already reached the irreversible state. So in this way, the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, or the object, the Mahayana specialty, special Mahayana refuge is the with these objects. And then the duration is also, since our goal is to accomplish the enlightenment, the ultimate enlightenment, for the sake of all sentient beings, so we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Because, for example, like we, if you need to go to unknown place, the first thing that you need is you need the guide who can show us the path. So the Buddha is a guide. So we need to rely on the guide until we reach the destination. Our destination is to accomplish the ultimate enlightenment. So until enlightenment is reached, that we take refuge in the Buddha. And then to reach destination, you need to actually travel on the path, either by walking or by car or by any means. And so we take refuge in the Dharma as our actual path. And then when you take such a long and difficult journey, instead of traveling yourself alone, that if you have companions, the trusted companions, and then it's very helpful. So we take refuge in the Sangha as our companions. So the duration is like this. And then the purpose in the Mahayana, the purpose is not for the one's own sake, but for the sake of all sentient beings. Because all sentient beings are our mother and our very dear ones. Because we believe in rebirth, we keep changing our life. We have taken different we are born in different families, different forms, different lives. So in this way, one way or another, it goes on all the time. So everybody, every sentient being has actually become our parents and our very dear friends and so on. But due to the change of life, then we do not recognize each other. And we see some as a friend, some as enemies, some as indifferent, but in reality, everyone is same. Everyone is mother. So therefore, if we ignore all the other mother sentient beings and just to seek a liberation or enlightenment to yourself is not right. Even in a worldly level, if you're closest family members, the dearest ones, your friends or relatives or family members, are in a great suffering. And if you yourself is in a safe and happy place, if you are a good-hearted person, you wouldn't feel happy. Even you can't help them, at least you try to do something to share their miseries. So similarly, all sentient beings are mother, all sentient beings are our very dear ones, so ignoring them and just to seek liberation or enlightenment for you oneself alone is not right. So we seek enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So the main purpose of taking refuge is not for the one's own benefit, one's own well-being, but for the well-being of all sentient beings. So that is the purpose. So in this way, that makes the Mahayana refuge special. The cause, the object, the duration, and the purpose. So in this way that we take refuge is the very first thing in the preliminary practice. And then, of course, now just most people follows the Vajrayana path. Then you need to take the Vajrayana refuge, which one can only teach only when you have received the major empowerment. And then, creating the enlightenment mind, which is also kind of goes together with the refuge of the enlightenment mind, which, as I said, the main purpose is to help the sentient beings. And then to enter the spiritual path and to succeed to attain the full enlightenment, we have many obscurations. We have many negative deeds that we have accumulated in the many lifetimes. So these have to be purified. So the way to purify it is through the practice of Vajrayana path, Vajrasattva meditation, and recitation of the 100 syllable mantras. And then at the same time, then we need to accumulate merits. And there are many ways to accumulate the merits, but the most effective way is to make the mandala offerings. All these are, of course, Vajrayana practices. One can only do those who have received the major empowerment. And then to receive the blessings quickly is the Guru Yoga. Because in order to attain the enlightenment, you need to realize the nature of the mind. And the nature of the mind could not realize by explanation or by giving examples or by giving logical reasons. It can only realize through the accumulation of merits and through the receiving the blessings of the Guru. So therefore, the Guru Yoga is very, very important. And so in this way that you should emphasize on the preliminary practices.